Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 137 of the Compassion and Cucumbers podcast. I'm Christine.
And I'm Sam.
Hey, hope everybody's doing great out there. How you doing?
I'm just fine. How are you?
How you doing?
Doing pretty good. I am a little tired because one of our cats woke me up way too early this morning, but other than that, I'm good.
That'll happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, happy National Animal Advocacy Day.
Indeed. Happy National Animal Advocacy Day.
That happens on the 30th of April, apparently, every year.
Yes, it does. And National Animal Advocacy Day, which is, in fact, celebrated on April 30th every year, is a special day to honor, respect, and celebrate every animal advocate who works tirelessly to save animals from abuse, exploitation, and cruelty. It was founded by the ASPCA, or the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, which is the first humane society to be established in North America and is still one of the largest in the world.
So if that's one of you, happy day.
Well, I would argue that any and all vegans are de facto animal advocates.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Hey, let's talk about what we did this weekend.
Sure.
We did some fun stuff this weekend.
We did. Yeah. So Saturday, we jumped in the car and we headed out to Syracuse, where we had been invited to participate in a panel at an event hosted by the Syracuse Vegan Living Program.
Yeah, we went to the Q's.
Yeah, we did.
And wow, we had such a great time at Syracuse Vegan Living.
We always have a good time when we go to Syracuse.
Let me tell you. Who all was there for this panel?
Because
it was a fine group of people.
Indeed.
Yes, so the day began there with a wonderful presentation by Demo Muratos. Demo Muratos is the communications director of the Sustainability Institute at Molloy University and was featured in the film Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret. He gave a great presentation on veganism and environmentalism. There was some shocking facts and figures in his presentation, and there were some people in the room that were taken aback by some of it.
That were truly stunned by some of the statistics, yes. It was really interesting to see.
Yeah, it was a great presentation. If you ever get a chance to hear him speak, please do. And then the second half of the session was the panel discussion, which we moderated and joined. I'm kind of was the moderator. Sam was on the panel.
Yes.
And along with Sam on that panel were panelists Nick Ryan, who is co-founder and co-owner of Strong Hearts Cafe.
We love them.
Syracuse and Buffalo. Teresa Stowell, who is co-founder and board member of Vegan CNY. And Jacqueline Capello, environmentalist and recipient of a plant-based nutrition certificate from Cornell's Center for Nutrition Studies. So great group of people.
Yeah, really great group of people.
Great group of people. Now, they had some questions that were submitted in advance, and they were emailing those to us. There was tons of questions. And then we first opened up questions to the people that were there at the session.
Yeah.
And we had some really great questions from some recent vegans.
We really did.
Yeah.
Yeah. The wonderful thing about the Syracuse Vegan Living Program, okay, it's essentially a six-week starter program for new vegans, and it is mentored by longtime vegans, but also the mentorship and the six-week program, it's all free.
Yeah, completely free.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's no registration fee of any kind. It's all done on a volunteer basis. And it's really just really a great resource for aspiring vegans area.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's fabulous. I think I mentioned to the people that were there how very, very lucky they were to have that program in place for people who want to explore veganism. It's just like this weekend they're going to Farm Sanctuary, and they have all kinds of really great educational events for people who pledge to become vegan.
Yeah.
And they learn, you know, recipes, and they learn things about animal advocacy and environmentalism. They learn every facet of veganism.
Yes.
Which gives them plenty of ammunition to maintain their veganism. I think it's a really great thing.
Absolutely. It's a great program.
Yeah.
Really great program.
Yeah. So we wanted to thank everybody there at Syracuse Vegan Living for inviting us up there to do this panel, because it was a great time.
Oh, it really was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we were invited back to Jacqueline Capello's for some wonderful vegan food. They had like a little vegan potluck. And wow, the food was fantastic.
Yep. We had some really incredible tofu burnt ends.
Oh, yes.
Which were amazing.
Yes.
And some barbecue baked beans and some wonderful roasted squash and a gorgeous green salad and absolutely spectacular cornbread made by our dear friend Crystal.
Yeah, the food was fantastic. Thank you, everybody that provided food for that dinner. And then we just had some really fun conversation.
Yeah.
And just a good hangout afterwards. So really great people up there in Syracuse, and we always enjoy visiting with our friends up there.
Yes, we do.
So thank you. And thank you to the Capellos for hosting us. They allowed us to stay at their beautiful home.
Yes, so generous.
So we didn't have to drive back at night.
Yeah.
And then I went on a hike with Jacqueline and some of her friends the next morning. And we had a beautiful hike. The weather was perfect. It was sunshiny and a little bit cool. And it was just a good day to be out in the woods.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Now, I did want to mention a couple of other things that we did while we were out traveling. On our way to Syracuse on Saturday, midday, we stopped in Batavia to grab lunch at Eden Cafe and Bake Shop.
Yeah. If you're ever in the Batavia area, check out Eden Cafe and Bake Shop. Their food is fantastic.
Yes, it is.
All vegan.
All vegan.
So good.
So we stopped in and had some lunch. So we started with their nachos. And one of the things we discovered about nachos is that round chips are the way to go.
Round chips are superior for nachos.
Yes.
Number one, the round chips are usually a little heartier. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a little stronger.
Yep.
And number two, you can one bite.
Yeah.
Those little round chips, one bite.
Yeah. It's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we started with their nachos, which were absolutely fabulous. And then I had their buffalo collie wrap. So it was a buffalo cauliflower wrapped in a whole wheat tortilla with all kinds of veg, a little bit of cheese, and kind of a ranch sauce.
Yeah.
It was absolutely lovely. And I had that with a side of their balsamic greens.
I had one of their crunch wraps.
Yes, you had the taco crunch
wrap. Right, the taco crunch wrap. And it came with a house-made chickpea patty and tons of veg and rice. It was so good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Nice.
Love a good crunch wrap. And it was like healthful. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't like junk food crunch wrap.
No.
It was really good. I had mine with the side of potato chips because that's just me.
Yep.
And had a wonderful hibiscus cucumber tea.
Oh, yes.
It was really good.
Beverages. Okay. So I had, because the last time we went to Eden Cafe, I had my first experience with a London Fog.
Right. That's right.
Yes. Which, of course, is steeped Earl Grey tea in latte form.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually has a bit of a hit of lavender syrup in it, which may sound a little bit odd, but if it's just the right amount, it's kind of amazing. Now, they were out of lavender syrup. And so instead, I had my London Fog with toasted marshmallow syrup.
Yeah.
It was genius.
It was really good. I tasted it.
Absolute genius.
Yeah.
Like it brought it almost to like butterbeer.
Yeah. It gave it kind of like a cream soda flavor to it.
It really did.
The combination
was just fantastic. So I think from now on, whenever I get a London Fog, I may be requesting toasted marshmallow, syrup instead of the lavender.
Yeah, because the combination of flavors between the Earl Grey and the marshmallow really, it gave it like this cream soda-y kind of flavor.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, no, Earl Grey has kind of a floral taste to it anyway, which is why the lavender works. But it was like somehow the toasted marshmallow like muted the floral flavor of the Earl Grey and just, I don't know, gave it a different kind of depth.
Yeah, it was
very
really
cool.
It was really good.
So good.
They top it with Violife whipping cream.
Which was awesome.
Which they whip whip up for you into a perfect peak of whipped cream on top.
It was a perfect peak of whipped cream.
It was a beautiful beverage. I did post pictures on our Instagram and Facebook if you want to take a gander at this beautiful beverage, because yeah. It was like, when she put it on the table, we were both like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got a warm tea, the hibiscus and cucumber, and it was really good.
I didn't taste Christine's tea, but it smelled fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really yeah. beautiful.
So it's a really cute place, and they have a wonderful full menu of items to choose from. Mm-hmm. They also have some really incredible baked goods,
yeah.
which we just didn't have room for.
No, sadly.
Yeah, we shouldn't have had the nachos.
No, we probably could have like shared a piece of cake if we hadn't gotten the nachos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, that was our food on the way out. And then, of course, we already mentioned the lovely dinner that we had at the Capello home on Saturday evening. But on Sunday, as we were heading back out of town, we stopped at our Syracuse go-to for breakfast, and that is, of course, Nice Biscuit.
We can't be in Syracuse without stopping at Nice Biscuit.
No, we can't.
It would be a sad thing.
It would be a travesty.
Yeah.
An actual travesty.
Yeah.
Yes. So we stopped at Nice Biscuit and got two of their absolutely phenomenal breakfast sandwiches. This time around, I actually got what they call the Trailblazer. Now, the difference between the Rambler, which is what Christine got, and the Trailblazer, which is what I got, my sandwich had a vegan sausage on it instead of vegan bacon. And the dang sauce is optional, but you also get a cheese choice. So I went with pepper jack cheese, dang sauce, and fried jalapenos.
Yeah, it looked pretty incredible.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. Just when I thought a Nice Biscuit sandwich couldn't get any better, it did.
You found a new favorite.
Oh my gosh. This is my new favorite. Yes.
And
it was amazing.
My favorite is the Rambler. I love the Rambler. It's a straightforward breakfast sandwich. Mm-hmm. It's vegan. It's Thrilling Foods bacon, which I love. Mm-hmm. It's just egg.
Which you love.
And a slice of vegan American cheese.
Which you love.
On their amazing biscuits.
Yes.
But I always get it with dang sauce.
Got to get it with the dang sauce.
Got to get it with the dang sauce, which is kind of like a chipotle.
It's a chipotle
sauce.
Mayo kind of. Yeah, it's nice and spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
And then we got a side of their potato wedges, which are so perfect. They're like perfectly crispy on the outside and then like super creamy on the inside.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
man, they're good.
The thing is, the sandwiches are so filling that one order of potato wedges is good for two people.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I think we made the mistake of getting two orders once. And
we did.
It was dumb.
It was.
We were like trying to finish them on the way home.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you do go to Nice Biscuit and there are two of you and you get individual sandwiches, know that you can split an order of the potato wedges.
If you want. I mean, they're really good.
Fine.
They're really good. They're really good.
And then I also got a staple, what I consider to be a staple at Nice Biscuit, which is their golden milk latte. So, of course, you know, a very turmericy, cinnamony, clovey, vanilla-y, wonderful beverage. And theirs is the most turmeric forward golden milk I've ever had.
It is the goldenest of golden milks.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
And I just went with a regular coffee with cream.
Yep.
Vegan, of course.
You were tempted by the cold brew, but...
No, but I've, you know, me and cold brew, we don't get along. Too much caffeine.
Yeah.
Way too much caffeine. Mm-hmm. Their coffee is really good. And I keep meaning to ask them, you know, what coffee supplier they use, because the coffee is really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you once again, Nice Biscuit, for an absolutely spectacular breakfast. You always send us on our way with happy tummies.
And big smiles on our faces.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. Good times there in the Syracuse.
Indeed.
Oh, hey, where will we be next week?
Well, this weekend we are heading to Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Veg Fair. So this is taking place on Saturday, May 4th, and that's happening at Rockwell Park, which is an indoor-outdoor space in the East End. And that will be happening from 11 to 5 on Saturday. And Pittsburgh Veg Fair 2024 is actually the Pittsburgh Veg Fest's 10th year anniversary party.
I didn't know that. How did I not know that?
I don't know.
I've been getting all the communications from them. Not once did I notice that.
Well, I've got it right here in front of me, but it is Pittsburgh Veg Fest's 10th year anniversary party.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. There's like 100 and some vendors, mm-hmm. and it's an indoor event, but there will be food trucks yep. outside and some food vendors inside. Lots and lots of cool vendors. So it's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
It's going to be a rocking good time.
Absolutely. So come on down.
We don't have a recipe this week because of all that jazz.
Yeah, indeed. We've been traveling, so no recipe this week, but uh-huh. we will get back on that.
We'll get back on it soon. In short order. Yes. We'll get back on it soon. Well, I'm holding Sam to her claim that she's going to start helping with that. So once she's out of school.
Yeah, once school's out, I'm going to kick you out of the kitchen for a while.
I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent.
So, hey, let's move on to our noteworthy section because we have some fun facts about non-human animals.
Come on. These are fun facts, guys. Let's have fun with them.
I know how you love a fun fact.
All right, let's dive into some fun facts about non-human animals.
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
First fun fact I want to talk about is dolphins use toxic pufferfish to get high.
Really?
Dolphins deliberately handle pufferfish, causing them to release toxins as a defense mechanism. These toxins can be deadly in high doses, but also have a narcotic effect and are a powerful hallucinogen, which dolphins appear to enjoy.
Huh.
So there's just a bunch of tripping dolphins swimming around in the ocean going, ooh, cool.
All right.
I mean, I wonder, I'm sure it really hasn't been studied, and how could you really study without doing bad things? How it's really affecting them.
I don't know.
You know, maybe it just makes them really happy.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or maybe it makes them see colors. Who knows?
It's possible.
But I think that's really interesting.
It is.
Dolphins are so cool.
They are. They really are.
What is your fun fact?
My first fun fact is that a group of parrots is known as a pandemonium.
A pandemonium of parrots.
A pandemonium of parrots. I absolutely love that. And the collective noun for porcupines mm-hmm. is a prickle.
A prickle of porcupines.
A prickle of porcupines.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes. So I am very happy with those two alliterative names.
Yeah.
A pandemonium of parrots and a prickle of porcupines.
Yeah.
Love that.
Here's an interesting one. The horned lizard is able to shoot blood from his own eye up to a distance of 3 feet away. The rather bizarre and disgusting act is a defense mechanism to confuse predators. Their blood contains a chemical that is noxious to predators, and this isn't its only trick. Short horned lizards are also capable of inflating their bodies to up to twice their size to scare anything away. I'm capable of that, too.
Cute. Very cute.
After a nice biscuit, I'm inflated to twice my size. So, yeah, don't come up on a horned lizard unless you want blood shot at you and want to see them get puffed up.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good tip.
That's really interesting.
It really is.
How does he do that?
I don't know. More research is required. Next, I have the fact that baby elephants, and who doesn't love a baby elephant? Baby elephants suck their trunks for comfort, just like babies and young children suck their thumbs.
Aww.
Yeah.
I've seen videos of baby elephants doing that.
Yeah. So they suck their trunks.
That's so sweet.
Isn't that adorable?
It's adorable.
I love that.
It's so funny. So far, yours have been cute and mine have been. Like, I'm picking all the kind of bizarre ones.
You're surprised by this?
Yeah. Hey, swifts. You know the bird swifts? You'll often see them if you're driving out in the country. They dive and they have some really incredible aerial maneuvers, the swifts. Do you mm-hmm. know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
They spend most of their lives flying in the air and can fly for almost an entire year without landing. A study showed that over a 10-month period, a swift stopped for just 2 hours.
No kidding.
So they just fly, fly, fly.
Wow. That's crazy.
That is crazy. They must have to continually eat. Because all they're doing is expelling energy.
Yeah, one would think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd have to have a heck of a diet. like serious caloric intake. Moving on, we have that white-tailed jackrabbits are the greatest land jumpers, having been recorded leaping an astonishing 21 feet vertically.
What? That's insane.
Yes.
21 feet.
21 feet. That's higher than three average-sized men standing on top of each other. Head to feet. Yes. This large species of hare can also run at up to 35 miles per hour when escaping predators.
Wow. We were just watching some rabbits in our yard jumping around. They do that this time of year. You know, they're all trying to make more rabbits. And boy, they do bounce around like crazy.
They do. They're so bouncy.
Yeah. Here's a really interesting one. Axolotl are able to regenerate lost limbs and body organs. The Mexican walking fish can regrow the same limb up to 5 times and even regenerate part of its own brain.
It can regenerate its brain?
It can regenerate parts of its own brain.
Okay.
That's like a superpower.
I would agree.
I wish I could regenerate parts of my brain.
Right?
Because I'm sure I've lost some along the way.
As have we all. But yeah.
I mean, the regrowth of limbs is one thing, but regrowing its own brain?
That's pretty amazing.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
And they're really kind of cute. There's a little picture of them, and they're cute. They're pink, and they have these cute eyes and these little fluttery things coming out of their gills. And they have feet because they're walking fish.
Right.
They're really cute.
Well, speaking of cute, my next one is also pretty cute. That Japanese macaques play with snowballs for fun. These snow monkeys have been observed rolling up snowballs, then pushing them down hills just for the heck of it. Others might gather lumps of snow in a ball and carry them around, proudly, sometimes to the envy of other monkeys who try to steal it.
Oh, those macaques.
So monkeys play with snowballs.
Yeah, that does not surprise me.
Mm-mm, me
that
either.
Does not surprise me at all.
It's still a great image.
Yeah. Hey, this one goes out to our friend Quillen. The giant Pacific octopus has 3 hearts, 9 brains, and blue blood. They're also able to change their colors and textures to camouflage themselves in the blink of an eye. And I think I've seen videos of the octopuses like changing color like that. Mm-hmm. It's amazing
How
quickly it happens. But yeah, they have 3 hearts and 9 brains.
9 brains. You just have to wonder the degree of intelligence.
Massive amounts of intelligence.
That is going on with 9 brains.
Yes. Yeah. And I am not, you know, I'm not an oceanographer.
This is true. You are not.
I just play one on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine they have 9 brains. 8 of those brains are probably controlling the tentacles, maybe taking in information from each of the tentacles.
Interesting.
It's just my guess. I don't know. And then the 9th brain is probably in charge of all its other
functions.
Functions.
Huh.
I don't know.
Again, I think research is required.
Octopi are extremely intelligent creatures.
Well, yes.
But yeah, 9 brains.
9 brains.
Yeah.
I sometimes feel like I could use 9 brains.
If I could just have one extra, I'd be happy.
Fair point.
You know?
Yeah.
Just like an extra one for days when you don't feel like you have a brain.
Yeah.
Just, oh, where's my spare? Where's my spare brain? I think I'll use my spare brain. Can I plug my spare brain in today?
Well, next, we have the fact that koalas have fingerprints that are almost identical to those of humans.
I've heard that.
Yes. Apparently, it is so hard to distinguish between the fingerprints of the koala bear and humans that even under a microscope, it's hard to tell which is which. There are even reported cases of a koala's fingerprints confusing forensic scientists at crime scenes.
Well, that's funny because I was just going to say, if you're going to commit a crime, partner up with a koala.
Right? There you go. Yes.
If you can find a koala that wants to commit crimes with you.
Well, fair point.
You know.
They might be a little reticent.
Yeah. This one we have firsthand experience with the mayfly. We have a mayfly season here. They come off the lake.
Yes, we do.
And we're just bombarded with all these mayflies. It's insane. There's so many of them. But the shortest living animal in the world is the mayfly, and their entire adult lifespan is just 24 hours. The mayfly reproduces and then dies during that short 24-hour period of life. Some species of mayfly only live for 8 to 10 hours. Although they have the shortest adult lifespan, they actually exist as a nymph in the water for 3 to 7 years, depending on the species.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember we had a big boom of mayflies a couple of years ago.
And oh, we did. It was crazy.
It was nuts. You couldn't, they were everywhere. And then just the next day there were just piles of them. Like I had to sweep them up.
Yep.
It was, I've never seen anything like it before. So if you see a mayfly, you know, please don't kill it. First of all, they're completely harmless. They may, you know, maybe a little annoying to you, but they only have 24 hours to get done what they need to get done. So let them go about their business.
Okay. So I know that, you know, I've gotten a bit of a rep for going for the cute ones, but
yeah,
this one's not so cute.
Okay.
Okay. The shoebill stork can swallow baby crocodiles whole.
Why would he want to do that?
I don't know. But the shoebill stork is a huge bird. They are over a meter tall, mm-hmm. up to 5 feet, actually, and have a wingspan of almost 8 feet. Its name comes from its huge beak, which is over 20 centimeters long and almost as wide. So along with lungfish, it also eats baby turtles and baby crocodiles whole.
Wow. Ooh, yeah, storks are crazy big.
Yes, they are.
I remember, I think it was storks. I was visiting my sister in Oceanside, California, and mm-hmm. we were at the beach. I swear to God, I thought it was a pterodactyl or something.
Really?
I looked up and I'm like, what is that? And Linda's like, it's a stork.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy cow. Because, yeah, 8 foot wingspan.
Yeah.
They're huge.
Yeah.
They're big birds.
Yep. We don't so much have storks around here. We get herons every now and again, which also have massive wingspans and are really impressive when you see them in flight.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are smaller, I believe, than their stork cousins.
Oh, yeah, much smaller. Much smaller. Okay, I think this is going to be the last one.
Okay.
The longest living verified animal is a Madagascar radiated tortoise, which died at the age of 188 years in May of 1965.
Wow.
However, there may be an even older tortoise, Adwaita, an Aldabra giant tortoise, died at an estimated age of 255 years in March of 2006 in Alipur Zoo in Kolkata, India. If verified, it would have been the oldest terrestrial animal in the world.
Wow.
But apparently they're having some trouble verifying this. Because nobody was around 255 years ago.
You know, that's a really good point.
So how would they know?
Yeah.
You know, they just have to take his word for it.
Right.
But yeah, even, I mean, 188, that's really impressive.
Yes.
Can you imagine what that tortoise saw in his lifetime?
Saw many things.
So many things.
So many things.
Wow.
Now, before we move on, I do want to toss one more thing out there.
Okay.
Just because I find this fascinating.
Okay, one last fact.
There are an estimated 8.7 million species on Earth, and more than 80% of them are undiscovered.
That's amazing.
Yes. So based on current data, complex statistics, and models, the number of species on the planet can be predicted, and that tells us how many are still left to be found. So it will likely take another 500 years to find all of them.
Yeah, if we don't destroy their habitat and their ecosystems.
There's that.
Before they're even discovered.
Yeah.
Because so many species are gone.
Yes.
Because of that, because of the land use.
You are not wrong.
So, yeah, that's, wow, that's really incredible.
The number of animals we think of being on the planet, but 80% have yet to be discovered. That's, I don't want to say unbelievable because I have no trouble believing it.
It's an incredible figure.
It's astonishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So just some animal fun facts. I love fun facts.
Gotta love a fun fact.
And I love animals. So that may have been, just a little self-indulgent of me.
It's all right.
To add the animal fun facts onto the show today.
It's all good.
Yeah. It's time for our main topic. This week's main topic is, what do hunters think of animal advocacy? You probably won't be surprised to find out what hunters feel and think of us animal advocates. There's an article on a website called sportsmansalliance.org. The article is titled, "Radical Influence: How the Animal Rights Movement Successfully Pushes an Extreme Agenda to Shape Society in Its Image." So the article starts off saying, taken individually, animal rights organizations pose a threat to hunting, ranching, and animal ownership with very specific approaches. Nonprofit animal extremist organizations or loose-knit groups focus their attacks in each of their own way.
They claim that rational people can easily see the fallacies of animal extremists when viewed in a very limited setting, say when conflict with large predators arises. Reasonable people, they claim, support a logical fix to ensure the safety of people and society at large. However, those usually sensible citizens begin to falter when the animal activists stir the pot and offer outlandish alternatives laced with emotional language. Still, rational folks can grasp that the extremist solution is a bit out there. Okay, so yeah. I already find this funny.
Yeah, let's dig into that paragraph a little, because we have rational people.
Reasonable people. Sensible citizens. And rational folks. Which we are apparently none of.
Yes. So you can take from that paragraph that sportsmansalliance.org and the hunting community at large believe that animal rights activists are irrational, insensible, and unreasonable people.
Yes.
That we are just out of our minds.
Yes. They go on in the article to refer to animal activists as vigilantes, and that activist groups such as the Animal Liberation Front, Sea Shepherd, Direct Action Everywhere, and PETA actually encourage attacking universities, laboratories, businesses, and people.
Right.
Which is simply untrue.
It's untrue. This is really inflammatory language. They also go on to say that those groups, aside from PETA, are unhinged.
Yeah.
They say PETA seems a little less unhinged by comparison to those other groups. Now, we know, we've talked about Direct Action. Direct Action is the group that Wayne Sung was a part of. They don't attack laboratories.
No.
They might infiltrate laboratories and rescue animals that are in serious harm. They don't attack people. They don't attack facilities. They rescue animals.
Yes.
Period.
The article also claims that, taken together, the more militant veins of the animal rights movement legitimize the ideas of the still extreme legal and legislative animal advocates, which makes them even more dangerous because people will happily settle on something that seems reasonable, even if it's not. So this is very interesting to me, that they're using the word reasonable and rational right at the top of the article to say that you are, if you believe in hunting and you believe in our outdoor traditions, as they call them, that you are a reasonable and rational person. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying, these people might be able to convince you that their point of view is reasonable, but it's not. Don't be fooled. Justification comes from pointing to the more radical blocs as they buy into well-rehearsed propaganda. That buy-in impacts American society as animal rights lobbyists turn proposed bills into laws and pass ballot initiatives that undermine wildlife management and directly threaten our outdoor traditions.
And there's that phrase that every hunter likes to use to justify going out and killing helpless animals.
Yes.
And it's wildlife management.
Yes.
Wildlife management is, it's just a catchphrase. It's just something to make it seem like it's okay. Like what we're doing needs to happen. We have to go out and kill these animals in order to manage them. So I wanted to, you know, point counterpoint here and just give you a little information about how that management works and if it actually is doing anything for the animals. Or if it is, like I said, just an excuse to go out and kill helpless animals.
Right. So, I mean, it has to be admitted that 100,000 years ago, hunting was a crucial part of human survival. I don't think anybody would really argue that. But right now, because we know very clearly that humans do not require animal flesh to survive and thrive, hunting is really nothing more than a violent form of recreation. And the vast majority of hunters, and of course we are accepting here native Aboriginal hunters, for example, in the Arctic or in the outback of Australia.
Yeah, I'm not questioning any kind of cultural.
No.
I'm not questioning any of that.
No, not at all.
What I'm questioning are people that go out and get a license to hunt multitudinous amounts of animals.
Yes.
Not just deer, bear. Let me just tell you some of the things that you can get licenses to hunt.
And while you're doing that, I'll just carry on to say that the vast majority of hunters do not hunt for subsistence purposes. They are hunting for recreation, and that recreational hunting has contributed to the extinction of animal species all over the world.
Yeah.
Now, about 4% of the U.S. population, or about 14.4 million people, are active hunters. Yet, hunting is permitted in many wildlife refuges, national forests, and state parks, in addition to other public land. So, 35% of hunters slaughter and maim millions of animals on public land every year, and by some estimates, poachers kill just as many animals illegally.
Yeah. So let me just give you just a kind of a taste. In New York, here are the hunting seasons that we have here. We have deer season. We have black bear season. We have wild turkey season. Waterfowl season, which is ducks, mergansers, geese, and brant. We have migratory game bird season. We have small game season, which includes birds, grouse, pheasants, quail, small game like squirrels, rabbits, and hare. Now, I'm not calling these animals game. This is coming from the New York government website. As well as frogs and turtles. There's fur bearer season where you can hunt raccoons, bobcats, coyotes, possums, and weasels. And if you're interested in trapping opportunities, there are licenses that you can obtain to trap all those animals also. And that's just here in New York State.
Yeah.
In other states where there's much more wildlife, there's even more. You know, there's elk, there's probably otter, there's probably beaver,
sure.
There's beaver
yeah.
season. Pretty much every wild animal on the face of the earth, you can go to a government website, buy a license to legally go and kill them.
Right. And so we've talked a little bit about the number of animals that are killed each year by hunters, but what that doesn't take into consideration is the pain and suffering that a lot of animals will go through when they are injured but not killed by hunters.
Yeah.
So recently there was a study done of 80 radio-collared white-tailed deer. Now, any of you who live in the northeastern United States know that we have a rather large white-tailed deer population. They are a native species to this area, and mm-hmm. so we have loads of them. So they studied 80 radio-collared white-tailed deer and found that of the 22 deer who had been shot with traditional archery equipment, 11 were wounded but not recovered by hunters. So half of the deer that are hit by hunters manage to escape and wind up seriously injured.
Yeah.
Or dying very slow, very painful deaths.
Yeah.
20% of the foxes wounded by hunters are shot a second time.
And another hunter, I'm
yes.
assuming?
Okay. Yes. And only 10% manage to escape. But for those foxes, starvation is a very likely fate. A South Dakota Department of Game, Fish, and Parks biologist estimates that more than 3 million wounded ducks go unretrieved every year. And a British study of deer hunting found that 11% of deer who'd been killed by hunters died only after being shot two or more times, and that some wounded deer suffered for more than 15 minutes before dying.
Yeah.
In addition to this, hunting disrupts migration and hibernation patterns and destroys family units. For animals such as wolves, who mate for life and live in close-knit family groups, hunting can devastate entire communities. The stress that hunted animals suffer, caused by fear and the inescapable loud noises and other commotion that hunters create, also severely compromises their normal eating habits, making it hard for them to store the fat and energy that they need in order to survive the winter.
So much for your management, right?
Yeah.
I understand that due to habitat loss because of human housing developments and shopping centers and all of this can create a situation where there are deer and other wildlife, you know, encroaching mm-hmm. into human areas.
Well, but really it's the humans encroaching into the deer's area.
Well, yeah, 100%. But a lot of hunters will use that as an excuse, you know, to say, look, if we don't go and hunt these populations, then the deer are just going to continually hurt themselves by running into shopping centers and all that. And it's like, how about we just stop knocking down forests?
Well, not only that, but allowing nature to kind of take its course. Okay. All of the globe's ecosystems are inherently balanced when humans don't mess with them.
Yeah.
And they're balanced so that they will survive, so that the ecosystem itself and all of its inhabitants, again, minus humans, will survive. So if nature is left to its own devices, natural predators will take care of populations of prey animals like the white-tailed deer,
right?
Because they will manage to kill the sicker, weaker individuals.
If we stop hunting animals. Like,
that's right.
Like fox, like wolves.
Yes.
Bobcats.
And so hunters, okay, instead of just killing the sicker, weaker animals, they're looking for the large, healthy, strong animals
right.
whose heads will look good over their fireplaces.
Right.
For example, elephant poaching is believed to have increased the number of tuskless animals in Africa. And in Canada, hunting has caused bighorn sheep's horn size to fall by 25% in the last 40 years. And that's just because stronger genetic animals are being culled from the herds.
Right.
When by natural selection, they wouldn't be.
Right. And so it seems as though it's causing like an evolutionary shift in how these animals grow.
Yes, absolutely.
For their own protection.
It's having a marked effect on the genetics
yeah.
of wild animal populations.
Yeah.
Now the question becomes, well, what can we do about this? Well, first of all, obviously, don't hunt.
Okay? Don't, yeah, please don't hunt.
Please don't hunt. Now, if you decide to support a wildlife or conservation group, as many of us do, make sure to ask about its position on hunting.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of conservation groups or wildlife groups that do support hunting. So you want to make sure you know what side of the argument a given organization falls on. So groups such as the National Wildlife Federation, the National Audubon Society, Sierra Club, the Isaac Walton League, the Wilderness Society, and the World Wildlife Fund are all pro-sport hunting.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, they don't oppose it.
And I think it's possibly a case of where some of the monies from hunting licenses are going to, air quote, conservation efforts.
Yes.
And so those monies go to those organizations. And it's just like every other funded organization, like the American Heart Association, right? Yep. That once the money is starting to roll in, then they have to maintain their stance that they support something like hunting. So yeah, it's very important that if you're donating to an organization like that, that you ask what their stance on hunting is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you live in an area where hunting is prevalent, for example, we actually live in an area where there's quite a bit of hunting mm-hmm. going on, particularly in the fall. There are definitely mornings in November where we wake up and we can hear the gunshots.
You can hear gunshots, yeah, because yes. we do live close to some wooded areas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if you would like to combat hunting in your area, post no hunting signs on your land. If you have a substantial amount of land and you live near wooded areas, make sure to post no hunting signs. Also, you can join or form an anti-hunting organization, protest organized hunts, and spread either deer repellent or human hair, which you can get from barbershops, near hunting areas. There is also a number that you can call to report poachers in national parks to the National Parks and Conservation Association. And of course, you can seek to educate others about hunting. Encourage your legislators to enact or enforce wildlife protection laws and insist that non-hunters be equally represented on the staffs of wildlife agencies.
Yeah, so I think that this is a subject that it's important for vegans to educate themselves on because many of us have family members who are hunters.
Yes.
And it's good to arm yourself with information so that you can, instead of just saying, I don't like it that you hunt, I don't like it that you go out and you kill Bambi.
Right.
You can have actual facts and figures to say, look, there, it's not land management, that this is hurting these populations of animals.
Yes.
That you're taking the best of their groups, of their family
groups. Of their genetic population. Yes.
And it's affecting the genetics of their entire population.
Yes.
Therefore, leaving behind the weaker and possibly sick members of their units.
Yes.
Which is not good.
No.
Not good at all.
No. Not good for the future of the herd.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about hunting?
Nope. Just don't do it.
Yeah. Please don't hunt. And if you know people that do, please try to discourage them. Mm-hmm. from hunting by giving them some of the information that we shared. And if you would like more information, you can reach out to PETA.org. They have tons of information on the effects of hunting on wildlife.
Yes, they do.
It's time for our brand new segment, which is still being called Assignment Save Our Vegan Restaurants until we can come up with something better.
I still think it has too many syllables, but we'll go with it.
I mean, it says what it is.
It does. I can't deny its efficacy. I'm just saying, too many syllables.
Please do not deny its efficacy.
No.
So on our very first installment of Assignment Save Our Vegan Restaurants, I wanted to tell you about a restaurant that's really struggling in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and Wilkes-Barre. They actually have two locations.
Okay.
And funny enough, the name of this restaurant is called Eden, a vegan cafe. They're literally weeks away from closing permanently. Now, Eden Cafe is located at 344 Adams Avenue in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and they opened their second location in Wilkes-Barre in October of 2019. And recently, the owner of Eden, a vegan cafe, his name is Christian. He made a post yesterday, another week in the books. Thanks for all the immense love. We are still kicking, and we'll see you again next Tuesday through Saturday. So they are literally living day by day. This Saturday, he said, hello, Saturday. We are grateful for another day in the shop, and we would love to cook delicious plant-based goodness for you today. We're doing it both in our Scranton and Wilkes-Barre shops today from 11:30 to 8. So come and get some and share some good vibes with us too. He says, we are still here and have not posted a closing date as of yet. It may be coming in the next few weeks. They're also exploring some other possibilities that could revive their restaurant. And they're really hoping that something gives. It sounds like the community there in Scranton and Wilkes-Barre is coming out to help support. But they're in dire need.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So if you're anywhere near the Scranton or Wilkes-Barre area in Pennsylvania, get the largest group of vegan friends that you can. And as Sam likes to say, get thee to...
That's right. Get thee to Eden, a vegan cafe.
A vegan cafe, and order as much food as you can afford.
Yes.
It's all we can do. So many restaurants are struggling. Every day I hear of a restaurant closing.
Yeah.
Sam recently was going through her favorites list on Happy Cow.
Yeah.
And I think you named four or five that of some of our favorite places that have closed.
Yeah, I was really surprised, kind of shocked actually, to learn that Fresh on Spadina had closed in Toronto, and also Hello 123, which is our favorite breakfast place in Toronto.
Hello 123 was a wonderful diner.
Oh my gosh.
Vegan diner.
Just amazing. So yeah, it was really sad to hear of both of them closing. We've also seen a couple of places in this area. I think most specifically Eat Your Feelings. I think of our vegan bakeries.
Yeah.
Though that wasn't specifically due to financial issues.
A lot of times it's not just the financial, it's the struggle.
Yeah.
That people just can't fight anymore.
Right.
And that was the case with Eat Your Feelings, is they couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. They were doing okay, but it was just, you know.
So much work.
They needed a break because it's just constantly struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah. So it's a heck of a task keeping a small business.
Any small business. And all vegan businesses right now are struggling. So if you know of a vegan bookstore or cafe or farm sanctuary or anything, if you can support, please get out of your house and support, because that is also part of the problem. Since COVID, people are not leaving their houses as much.
Yeah.
We are now used to getting everything delivered to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're DoorDashing, we're Amazoning, we're, you know, I'm not saying us personally, but that has become kind of the
new normal.
Global norm since COVID and the shutdowns and all that. We learned a new way to live, and it is making it really hard for small businesses to survive.
Yes.
So I wanted to give a big thanks to Anne Forno, who sent us the information on Eden, a vegan cafe. Thank you so much, Anne. And we're wishing Christian and everybody there the best. I hope that they can make it work.
Yes.
And if not, I wish them all the success in the future, whatever they decide to do.
And I can't tell you how much I wish we were close enough to answer the call.
Oh, every one of these restaurants that we're going to be talking about, I wish we were close enough to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, what I guess the point is, if you have places around you, don't just assume they're going to be there tomorrow.
Right.
Because so, like I said, so many of our favorites are gone now.
Yeah.
If you can afford it, once a week, try to go out and support a vegan business.
Yep.
And that was Assignment Save Our Vegan Restaurant. So I hope that this... I've been getting so many submissions for this, so it's obviously striking a nerve with people. And I appreciate everybody that's sending in restaurant information. Keep them coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Keep them coming.
Keep them coming, and we'll keep this going as long as we possibly can. That brings us to our favorite portion of the show.
Must be listener shout out time.
It's listener shout out.
Just want to give a shout out to all my fans watching. I love you guys. I love you.
This week's listener shout out goes to Holly Bilski. Holly recently commented on our YouTube and gave us an entry for our assignment Save Our Vegan Restaurants segment. Thank you for listening, Holly.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and thank you for your submission. We will get to it soon. And you can contact us with your t-shirt size and address so that we can send you a Compassion and Cucumbers swag bag. You can send that information to us at our email, which is compassionandcucumbers@gmail.com, or DM us on Instagram or Facebook, or I think you can private message on YouTube.
There you go.
You can try that also.
And for the rest of you out there, if you want a listener shout out, please email or DM or comment on our YouTube. Let us know what you think of the show and tell us a little bit about yourself.
That brings us to our vegan org of the week. And appropriately this week, our vegan org is Sheldrick Wildlife Trust.
Yes. Born from one family's passion for Kenya and its wilderness, the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust was established 45 years ago and is best known for its Orphans Project, the first and most successful elephant orphan rescue and rehabilitation program in the world. The Sheldrick Wildlife Trust is a pioneering conservation organization dedicated to the protection of wildlife and the preservation of habitats in East Africa. If you'd like to learn more about their mission, you can go to sheldrickwildlifetrust.org.
It's already time to wrap this baby up.
Sure is.
Just a few calls to action for you. Like we always do, we're begging you to please join the Agriculture Fairness Alliance's Vegan Voter Hub. We always put that link in the show notes, so go ahead and click it if you haven't clicked it yet. And subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast app, and subscribe to our YouTube. Leave us a rating and a review on any of those places if you can. And send us your favorite vegan recipes for our listener recipe series. We're going to get Sam in the kitchen this summer, so send her some recipes to make.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
And you can send those to all of those places I mentioned earlier.
And with that, it's time to sign off. You have just listened to episode 137 of the Compassion and Cucumbers podcast, and there's nothing left to say, but where cukes and compassion are always the fashion on the podcast.
Thanks, James.
Have a great week, everyone.
Hey, we'll talk to you next Tuesday. We'll have a lot to tell you about the Pittsburgh Veg Fair.
We love you.
We do. Bye-bye.
The end.
If you'd like to support the Compassion and Cucumbers podcast, well, you can do that by hopping on over to our Patreon page and becoming a patron. We have all the recipes from our vegan kitchen series up there, and we'll be adding some patron-only episodes in the near future. So thank you for supporting us at whatever level that you choose, and thank you again for listening to Compassion and Cucumbers podcast.